What's up, you guys? Sean Ross at FightfulSelect.com. This is the Backstage Report podcast, and man, we have a lot to get into. Lots of stuff happened since we last spoke with you. There was AEW Lexington, there was the Royal Rumble. We did a ton of media events in San Antonio. We're going to talk about all of that. The Royal Rumble, I'll give you guys my thoughts on that because I was only on the post show for a brief period. But my God, man, there's just so much news going on. I guess we should lead into Kota Ibushi. I mean, that broke this morning that Kota Ibushi was headed to GCW. I first got word of this actually last night and didn't even have time to confirm it because it was so quick, the turnaround. I definitely didn't expect them to announce it this quick, but they announced it as soon as he was a free agent in Japan. Midnight Tokyo time, he's free to work wherever he wants. There is major interest from a number of companies in him, whether it be a contracted deal or a one-off. Now, I've spoken with people that are close to him. I have not spoken with him directly. I have reached out. They believe that he was very happy doing the freelancing thing before signing with New Japan, and that New Japan was a live-and-learn situation as far as signing a full-time deal. That deal devolved, not just because of him being asked to wrestle with an injured shoulder, but we're told there was a significant private matter with Ibushi that he was dealing with that I'm not going to pry into, I'm not going to get into, and I feel like everybody kind of should respect that privacy, but New Japan wanted him to work through that, and that didn't seem to help the relationship either. He's confirmed for several GCW shows during WrestleMania week, which had been in the works since earlier this month. We're told that the plan is for him to work a big spring break match, main event with Joey Janela. I mean, that would be fantastic for all involved, I think. Because, I mean, I know a lot of people, once Joey Janela was out of AEW, it was out of sight, out of mind for a lot of people. But this match is going to have a lot of attention on it, and I think it's going to be one of the best matches of that entire weekend. Joey Janela is going to do everything that he can to make that match as big and impressive as humanly possible, and I'm just saying I'm pleasantly surprised to see Kota Ibushi back. People were asking me last summer, last fall, they're like, oh, he's going to sign with AEW, he's going to do that, and I was like, I don't expect him back anytime soon. I didn't expect him back in 2022. I just didn't think it was a realistic thing. I knew he wasn't going to wrestle for New Japan. I knew that was pretty well off the table, although any fences can be mended, so to say. But I'm just glad that that he's back. I'm hopeful that he's healthy and healed up and all that and doing what he wants to do and enjoying life and wrestling because, man, he's missed over a year. By the time he gets in the ring, it'll have been a year and a half. Lots more news. Royal Rumble, original plans called for Ronda Rousey against Raquel Rodriguez at the Royal Rumble. However, we're told that Ronda Rousey was presented with some creative options around December of last year, and none of them seemed right for either her, the company, or whatever. I'm not sure who shut those down, who made the pitches, what pitches were made. But the Ronda Rousey Raquel Rodriguez match, which was a great one, was actually moved up a full month to December 30th. And then they decided to bring Charlotte Flair back. Charlotte Flair was tentatively scheduled on a suggested matches list to wrestle Bianca Belair for the Raw Women's Championship at WrestleMania. Rhea Ripley was set to take on Ronda Rousey, but that's when Ronda Rousey was still champion. Now we know that Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair will now face each other at WrestleMania. We don't know who Bianca Belair will face yet. I mean, there's one spot that is yet to be announced for the Elimination Chamber. I love how they played that out, as I mentioned on the Raw show last night. But a lot of shifts there as a result of taking one big name out of there. And it's a shame. Like, I wasn't keen on Ronda Rousey's work last year, but that Raquel Rodriguez match kicked ass. It was very, very good. The Jay Briscoe tribute in AEW Lexington. A lot of things were changed to accommodate it on AEW Dynamite last week. Prior to Tuesday, it did not look like the tribute or Mark Briscoe's match was happening, but AEW moved a lot of things around to make it a reality. Ian Riccaboni was booked for the show Tuesday, flew in a few hours before the show. Talent that we spoke to believed that Mark Briscoe could have been on Dynamite himself before Jay's passing, but we've since been told that wasn't the case. WBD did not want either one of them, but the new bosses were said to have been very helpful in Tony Khan's incredible efforts to make this happen. I know that Tony Khan didn't just start fighting for this after Jay Briscoe's passing. Tony Khan tried to get Warner Brothers Discovery to run FTR and the Briscoes numerous times last year, several times. Now, some of the changes that we heard of, Darby Allin, Buddy Matthews was supposed to main event, had some time trimmed in order to make room for that match. We're told that the Guns Acclaim video was also set to go longer. It was trimmed to make some time. You could kind of see the edits there. One source told us it was impressive how they were able to provide Mark Briscoe and Jay Lethal as much time as they needed without compromising anything else that was advertised. And as Will Washington has mentioned on Day After Dynamite and Grapsody, Tony Khan maximizes seconds big time, like loves doing that. So I'm sure this was like a unique challenge for him. People that I spoke with were very happy about the show. Kenny Omega really wanted to be there, but had been battling visa issues that seemed to be rectified. Dalton Castle was at the show. He was front row cheering on Mark Briscoe. FTR had already been scheduled to be there backstage at the show, as was Adam Cole. Fightful also delivered the awards to AEW that AEW wrestlers won. I had somebody asking us about this process. So when people win these awards, we either reach out to them directly, PR for AEW or WWE, but the ones that we have direct connections to, we'll reach out to ourselves. AEW said, yep, they all want them, because if somebody doesn't want them, we're not going to pay the outstanding cost of having them produced and shipped. Well, we had them produced, and it just so happened that AEW was in Lexington, so that saved us hundreds, if not $1,000, and we took them there on Wednesday morning before the show and wheeled them into Rupp Arena. I was taken downstairs into a backstage area. Obviously, that is not the type of area they want me wandering around, so I dropped those off, got my little dolly back and all that good stuff, had to bring by Hooks later because it arrived a little bit late. And several wrestlers, the Young Bucks, Brandon Cutler, they took pictures with theirs. It was on Being the Elite. MJF won 3. He took pictures with his as well. The most flattering part, absolutely, was Dax, Cash, and Mark Briscoe taking a picture with theirs. With all that Mark Briscoe had to think about and worry about, it's an honor to us that he would even take the time to do that or even care about it. And then I was told that Mark Briscoe is giving Jay Briscoe's to Jay's widow, which is, you know, it means a lot to us that they would even care enough to do that. But also, we're very glad that our audience has something that they can give to Jay Briscoe's family to show them that myself and that all of our audience really appreciated the work that they put in, especially into that dog collar match. So I just wanted to say, to our audience that voted and all that stuff, thank you guys for making that a reality, because that means an awful lot to us as well. So AEW Lexington ended up being a really, really fun show. I was there ringside, I think fifth row or something like that. But it was a good show, and that was a special thing to see live. And yeah, man, it was just, whew, it's something you hope you never see again. We also spoke to Aubrey Edwards for a new interview. We talked about her game programming background and AEW Elite General Manager. She was helping oversee their decision-making, time management, and budget. She would help guide those creative aspects, consult on the art direction. She wrote the scripts for the season passes. They only had a couple of people on the team who were big wrestling fans, so she helped out a lot in that sense and taught some people the ropes. She also spoke highly of Cody Rhodes, Marty Elias, Chris Jericho as people that have helped her as well. She said that nobody's cracked her in the ring yet, but Nyla Rose was able to do that on a game stream. That interview is a lot of fun. I encourage you guys to check it out. It is on youtube.com/fightfulnow. So check it out. Speedball Mike Bailey spoke with the Wrestling Perspective podcast, Lars Fredrickson and Dennis Farrell, here on Fightful. He said that Josh Alexander was a big reason that he joined Impact, and that he wanted to face Josh Alexander badly. He said Kenny King was the one who came up with the idea for the fight pit, and that if he would have signed with a promotion for a lot of money and they wanted him to be a clown who farts around, and how he moves is with his farts, he would still be good at pro wrestling. So I think that's insinuating like the only way that he could move around the ring is by farting, and the sheer pressure of it would like slide him around, because I don't think he'd be able to take steps doing that. I'm not a scientist or anything, but he said if you looked at who worked at PWG in 2016, most of those wrestlers are signed with AEW or WWE, and he thinks that had he been working in the United States sooner, he probably would have had a different career path, but he's thankful for the one that he's had. Two people who didn't work PWG were Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows. They are signed for 5 years, that I've learned. They're in the company until late 2027. Those that we spoke to say that Triple H helped negotiate their decision in 2019, which we know about, but also wanted to make sure they were taking care of this deal as they kind of got screwed over there. They were not used at the Rumble or Raw, and they had requested to not be brought in if they weren't going to be used, which is an interesting note. Giovanni Vinci, he grabbed his knee last week on Raw. He's fine, I'm told. There were people of influence within the company that were very happy with how Raw 30 turned out as well. We've seen Bella Twins, Tatanka, Afa, Sika, all tempted to, or not tempted, advertised for the show or teased for the show, didn't end up doing it. Neither did Rikishi. Undertaker's coat and a hat were sent to the show, even though it wasn't used, but a literal passing of the torch there. But no NXT talent brought in for that show, although Damon Kemp and Tony D'Angelo were brought in this week. There was a big change to Raw 30, as we saw. Next week, the cage match between Becky Lynch and Bayley will happen. I know there were a lot of people upset last week when this match didn't happen. It got cut for time because the Bloodline stuff went long. Those that we spoke to this week were like, you know what? It's probably one of those happy accidents because they got an angle last week. They got a spot in the Royal Rumble. They got a promo on Raw on January 30th that made things a lot more personal. So in a matter of 1 week, you got three additional points of heat that were not there leading into that match that made that a lot better. So I understand that some people were upset about that, but we were told they could either work an angle to set up a full-on match or do a cage match that lasted a minute or two, so it all ended up okay. So there was lots of Rumble news this week. We reported that Chelsea Green was going to be back for the Royal Rumble, and that she had a new character that we're told is supposed to be comedic in nature. It's the Karen character that they debuted really at Royal Rumble, but it kicked off on WWE Raw. Good to see her back. She's been signed for a very, very long time, since like October, November. She didn't end up doing WrestleCade. I don't know if it's because she was signed, but she ended up pulling out of that. They pulled a lot of their current talent out of there as well. But the SmackDown before Royal Rumble, there was a whole lot of talent, like Street Profits and Austin Theory, that were in San Antonio Friday morning. We did media with them, and they went back to Lubbock for SmackDown, then back to San Antonio the next day. Drew McIntyre, New Day, Bobby Lashley, they were all at SmackDown Friday night and then in San Antonio doing media with us less than 12 hours later. There was an awful lot there. So I'll kind of walk you guys through that experience because it is time to talk about the Royal Rumble, time to kind of go into all the scoops that were associated with that. But Royal Rumble, we were told there was never really any possibility that Austin and The Rock were going to be in that. It just wasn't a possibility. Austin hadn't got back to them on the WrestleMania thing, so it's not the case. As mentioned, Gallows Anderson not in town for the show. AJ Styles not in town for the show. Chelsea Green was not hidden. Pat McAfee confirmed our report that he was pitched for a Royal Rumble spot. Michael Cole and Corey Graves both said they did not know that he was coming out. A private jet brought McAfee in the day of the show. Cody Rhodes had claimed that he wasn't officially cleared to the day of the Rumble. This matches up to something that people close to him had told us in the weeks prior when he was at the Performance Center that he actually wasn't cleared. Logan Paul appeared at the Royal Rumble. That confirmed our report that said that they wanted him for the Royal Rumble. They want him for WrestleMania as well. Last year, there was a decree of no NXT talent used or pitched for the Rumble, which obviously is not the case anymore. Don't know why there weren't any on the men's side, but there were some on the women's side. There was a unique way of how they would exit the ring. They would exit on the side nearest the announce table. So when the ref was selling, he did that. He went through there. Logan Paul was taking pictures with people. But typically, it was selling all the way back for that. But as many pointed out, Ricky Starks was at the Rumble. He was at Mania last year, too. This is just not out of the realm of normalcy or anything. This happens all the time. It's not that big of a deal. Nobody's upset about it, unless people are looking for something to be upset about. I was told the Rumble backstage experience was very laid back. A lot of children and many wrestlers were backstage having fun. I'll have more on the backstage sort of environment compared to last year's as well. The pay-per-view went a little over time. It was scheduled for 4 hours, ended up going about 12 minutes past that. Ronda Rousey was not expected for that show from the point that she lost the women's title. I know that there were reports that they had figured out about a week before she wouldn't be in it. I was told as far back as December she wasn't going to be in the Royal Rumble or on that show. Doudrop, Chelsea Green, Chad Gable, Otis, Street Profits, Xavier Woods, Mishin, Damian Priest, Edge, Beth Phoenix, a bunch of NXT stars. We had reported that they were all in town for the Royal Rumble. We had also reported that Matt Cardona, The Rock, Steve Austin, Switchblade, Jay White, Mickey James would not be in the Rumble. Bo Dallas was in town. He was used as Uncle Howdy as well. We'll have more on that match very shortly. But Cody Rhodes' merchandise was flying off the shelves, Royal Rumble and WWE Raw. His signing did very, very good. They want to do more with him as well. Some stats, B-Fab, that was her first main roster match ever. It was her third televised match ever, and she lasted just a few seconds. Didn't do much of anything. Dana, Natalya, Tamina, Liv Morgan have been in every women's Royal Rumble match, which is really, really great. The Hardy performance, that was largely scoffed at by those we spoke to in the company and felt like it compromised some time that could have went to others. Because, I mean, Bray Wyatt got like 5 minutes. Alexa Bliss and Bianca Belair got about 7 minutes. And then this Hardy thing got about 4 minutes. Well, you know, 7 minutes and 9 minutes go a long way whenever you add for this Hardy thing. And it's on Peacock. They can go as late as they want. But they wanted to keep it 4 hours. We didn't hear any discussion of doing a pre-show match or anything like that. Michael Hayes produced the Kevin Owens-Roman Reigns match, in case you guys were wondering. I was told that was a curtain sellout of sorts. It certainly was for us in the media room. They rushed us down there right after the bell, and we were all huddled around my phone, other people's phones, in order to see what happened. But I was told that that was the case with monitors backstage. People crowded around them, very quiet, and just trying to see what was going down. It's a very popular angle, both with wrestlers and with fans and pundits, so to speak. So kudos to WWE doing like just an absolute killer of an angle. Absolute killer. So let's go ahead and talk about the Royal Rumble, because I didn't get to do a full review of it. And I really wanted to talk about like what went down there and my thoughts on it and all that. I felt like this was a very safely booked Royal Rumble for Triple H's first Royal Rumble. But also, I think that there are a ton of really, really great things that happened. Men's Royal Rumble, Women's Royal Rumble. We've been calling who was going to win that for months. Not me on Fightful.com. All of you people have also been saying, well, it's got to be Rhea and Cody, right? Got to be Rhea and Cody. Like, we knew that was going to happen. You cannot underscore possibly how important the Gunther thing is. To go from coast to coast all the way and go 71, almost 72 minutes is incredible. Having Sheamus come in second, it was just so smart. You want those great face-offs. Johnny Gargano was in for half an hour. Wish he would have eliminated somebody, but Judgment Day getting a good run was really, really, really smart. I liked that an awful lot. Booker T and Logan Paul as the surprises, I'm cool with that. Edge as a surprise as well. So you pretty much had three surprises, two really. But I don't need a bunch of surprises. I don't need that. Look at the lineup. Sheamus, Miz, Kofi Kingston, Drew McIntyre, Brock Lesnar, Bobby Lashley, Seth Rollins, Rey Mysterio was supposed to be in it, Finn Balor, Booker T, Edge, Braun Strowman. You got a dozen former world champions in there. Would have loved to have seen Nakamura, a former Royal Rumble winner. That would have made an awful lot of sense. But I think that there were a few things that were important. Edge is in there. He lasted a minute. And I think it's important that he's in there because the last we saw of him in a Rumble match, he won it. And I think that it's important to establish that somebody can kind of dominate him in that sense, even in a short order with him aging. It's cool. It's good for him to kind of put somebody over in that environment. Drew McIntyre did almost 39 minutes. See, a lot of people, because of Gunther, weren't highlighted for the time that they spent in it. Sheamus did 52 and a half minutes and eliminated three people. Drew McIntyre, 39 minutes and four people. Seth Rollins did like 37 minutes and two people. And Johnny Gargano did it a half an hour. Dominic was in there for 25 minutes even. And he was really, really great. The thing I didn't like was we don't know what the hell happened to Rey Mysterio. We don't have any concept of that whatsoever. Brock Lesnar coming in, lasting about 2 minutes, getting tossed out by Bobby Lashley. I thought that was really great. That's good stuff, man. Like, he doesn't need to come in and win. Set up the next angle. And that's what I felt like they did, was they set up a lot of angles here. They set up Brock Lesnar, Bobby Lashley. They set up Cody Rhodes and Judgment Day, him eliminating Dominic. They continued the Drew Karrion Kross thing that they did months ago, a little bit of a nod to that. I wish Karrion Kross would have lasted a little bit longer. I wish they would have had somebody else in for Rey Mysterio. There were people around. You could have absolutely found somebody. I know Dexter Lumis was around. There were plenty of people who were around that could have been used. Because if you weren't using Rey Mysterio, then where's the harm in bringing in a Matt Cardona or somebody like that for that spot? And then we got to talk about the Ricochet Logan Paul spot because, I mean, I've watched every Royal Rumble so many damn times. It's my favorite thing. I love it. I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like that in a Royal Rumble match. Now, I know that Kofi and CM Punk did something very similar years ago in the Elimination Chamber, but this was just breathtaking. It was amazing. It was very special, and I was so happy to see that. It was a moment we could all see coming, but you didn't quite know it would be executed that way. Another thing I like, Miz, out in a few minutes. He kind of gotten the reputation of being in the Rumbles for a long time. At least that's how it felt to me. So him being in and out made an awful lot of sense. I want to see more matches that happen with people based on them being eliminated from the Royal Rumble. Like that to me is always just like such a duh type of thing. Even if it's on main event, right? Like, quite honestly, there's not a lot of people here that are working on main event or anything like that because, and most of the people who eliminated another person certainly aren't going to be on main event. If I had to look at somebody, honestly, the most likely is a Damian Priest or an Austin Theory, and they are firmly entrenched on this show. Almost everybody who eliminated somebody else is on Raw every week. But I'm just saying, if you wanted to use that as the catalyst for a story, well, I mean, that makes an awful lot of sense. Like, why wouldn't Montez be upset at Damian Priest? Why wouldn't Johnny Gargano be upset at Dominic Mysterio and Finn Balor? Dominic and Balor should be on Gargano's list of people that he's after. So I think that would be great. And, you know, Dominic and Cody Rhodes would make a lot of sense for one of these shows too, but I do think that you got to kind of wait for Dominic to get his comeuppance in that sense. But I remember this happening, like it was the 1996 Rumble, I think it was, and I remember watching it, and it was Fatu who eliminated the Ringmaster, Steve Austin. And what they did was, immediately after that, they did Steve Austin, the Ringmaster, against Fatu, eventually Rikishi. And it aired a couple weeks later on WWF Superstars. And it's like, well, damn, that made an awful lot of sense to do that match because the Ringmaster had all this hype and was built up to be something special. And obviously that gimmick sucked, but obviously he also became something very special. And then 10 minutes in, whoops, he got eliminated. Uh-oh. So what do? You put him in a match, he gets a little bit of vengeance. I do want to say Cody and Gunther having a full-on match at the end of the Royal Rumble. One of my favorite Royal Rumbles of all time is 2007 when Shawn Michaels and Undertaker had that 7-minute ending to the Royal Rumble, because so often we just see quick elimination, surprise, dump over the top or anything like that. But this wasn't that, and this was a lot more like The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. This also went a good 7 minutes, a little over 7 minutes, and holy crap, it makes you want to see a full match, right? Mountain Dew Pitch Black match. Listen, I like Bray Wyatt, especially personally. I don't know if there's a more likable interpersonal guy. Like, he seems so genuine and thankful and just a sweet dude. I don't know why they always got to do weird light shit with him, like turning the lights off and the canvas has got stuff on there and the red lights and all that. This was the neon stuff. It looked very cool. The match was not good from what I saw of it. And then Uncle Howdy missed LA Knight on the aftermatch thing by like a foot. Okay. LA Knight has been the highlight of this. The Uncle Howdy stuff is very Oz-ish. Bray Wyatt is, again, put in a position to cut promos where, like, not a lot is said and there's not a lot of progression or anything like that. So I don't really know what's happening or what's going on, and I hope it leads to something. But this is for a very direct group of people. I will say one thing I'm okay with. So far, the lore, as they say, hasn't been supernatural type of stuff, and I get that maybe that torch was passed, so to speak. But all right, man. All right. Bianca Belair, Alexa Bliss. Bianca Belair wins, and she won fairly quickly, like 7.5 minutes. I understand you have to put a women's title match of some capacity on this show. There's no Charlotte or anything like that, but I feel like one of these two matches could have went. Like, is Mountain Dew going to be that upset if you do this sponsored match on Raw or SmackDown? Well, no, because more people are going to watch it. But would that 5 minutes have helped Alexa and Bianca? Probably. But we're getting the lore out of Alexa. All right, man. Let's talk about the Women's Royal Rumble. Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan both go coast to coast. They went Bulldog and Shawn Michaels in 95, except way more impressive because back then it was like 60-second entrance. So I loved that. Rhea Ripley with 7 eliminations. For everybody talking about how we didn't ask any tough questions at the presser, I didn't get a question with Triple H. Sure wish I did. Would have asked about Vince and the creative process, but we also have new platforms to launch, and us asking Rhea Ripley about going coast to coast is by far the most viewed TikTok clip that we have on a platform that we really, really need to grow on. And she seemed very, very excited to be able to do that because she dreamed about it before she had the option of doing it. And Liv Morgan, we heard her talk about how important that was to her to be early in the Rumble, and she eliminated 3 people as well. You had Bayley, Dakota Kai, and Io Sky eliminating 5 people as damage control. That's great. That's what you want to see there. I thought that Chelsea Green coming back was a nice surprise. Also her making history and being the Karen was great. Michelle McCool ringside, that was a very cool spot. She still looked incredible. Got her 14 minutes in, a couple of eliminations. You have Roxanne, Zoe, Indy Hartwell, all getting their spots in the Royal Rumble. Indy probably needs to get called up already, see if she can sink or swim. Piper Niven being back, no more Doudrop. That is wonderful. 2 eliminations, 28 minutes for her. That's fantastic. B-Fab, all right, a 36-second spot. You can show that she, quote-unquote, wrestles in the ring, even though she doesn't have matches. Good. Put her in there. Why not? Asuka, oh boy, that was fantastic. Like, when people saw the reveal, enough in the venue knew exactly what the hell was going on. They knew exactly what was up with her, right? Loved it. Fantastic stuff. Also, I want to point out, Shayna Baszler is always a really genius performer, but you really see it in Battle Royals, completely separate of getting eliminations or not, but the way that she works makes sense, and hats off to her for that. Nia Jax as the last one. Well, besides them botching the entrance, this was great. Now, I am not a fan of Nia Jax's work, in fact. But her as 30, lasting 2 minutes, you get her beat down, so you get that reaction. You get her, firing back, so you get the hope spot, right? But then you have a bunch of people eliminated. It took Asuka, Lacey, Liv, Mia, Michelle McCool, Nikki Cross, Piper Niven, Raquel, Rhea, Shotzi, Sonya. 11 people to eliminate her. That's great. That's a good spot. I think that's just a really, really smart one to do in the Royal Rumble. You also progressed the Becky and Damage Control story. I thought this was a really good Rumble. I thought it was really, really good. I wish there was a way to kind of change some of the way that women are eliminated, because biologically, they're shorter. We're talking about several inches shorter here than what we're dealing with the guys. Usually the guys are between 5'10", 6'2", on average. The women, a little closer to 5'3", 5'7", and a little harder to get people over the ropes just easily like that. So there's a lot of brawling on the apron and stuff. Oh, by the way, the Xia Li elimination looked rough. Rough, but I'll tell you what didn't. Asuka, Liv, Rhea. Asuka spits the mist at Rhea, gets it in Liv's face. Liv is fighting blind, almost eliminating Rhea Ripley. I thought there was a possibility maybe they would just throw something random and do that, but Rhea ends up winning. Just a brilliant, smart finish. I thought the first Royal Rumble, the men's, was a very safe one. I thought that this one was a brilliantly booked one. You got surprises, you got a couple legends, you got a couple hope spots, you furthered some storylines, you reestablished some people, you had history made, a big winner, and a great finish. Just really, really good stuff. Roman Reigns beats Kevin Owens. Match was great. Let's talk about the match. It was great. Kevin Owens taking those spots on the stairs, intense. You knew he wasn't winning, though. The aftermath was perfect. This is one of the best wrestling storylines I've ever seen. And you're going to see weenies on the internet try to convince you you're wrong for feeling that way. Feel that way. It's been incredible. It's been special. We've seen this coming for a long time, and for so long. Should it be Roman turning? Should it be Sammy turning? It was both, and it was perfect. What I didn't expect was the Jey Uso element. After all this time, Sami Zayn working to get the absolute trust of Bloodline, and especially Jey, the holdout. But then Jey walks away while his brother is saying, "That's not your brother. That's not your blood." Ooh, damn. The shades of the Shield turn. God damn, that's good stuff, man. Paul Heyman saw the mass transit incident happen, but this had him freaked out. That's a big selling point. Paul Heyman has seen it all, man. He has seen it all, but this was shocking to him. This is a special angle. Now, a couple months ago, I posted on Twitter, the Usos have been pinned 11 times in 2-on-2 non-title matches. This is why I think it was important that they didn't lose non-title 2-on-2 matches. Because if and when Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens do it, it will still be a fantastic moment. I feel like if they were utterly dominant in 2-on-2 competition, this would be a lot different. Because you can come out there and say, we win when it matters the most, and that's great. But you have proven yourself to be beatable by 7, 8, 9 teams in this. And that's not even counting DQs. We're not counting singles matches. We're not counting tag team matches, six-man tag matches. You know, they're going to lose singles matches. They're the best 2-on-2 team, not the best singles wrestlers, not the best six-man tags. But I thought it was very important that they still be dominant in 2-on-2 competition. And as I look back, at their 2-on-2 competition, well, they beat the Judgment Day. That's great. That's fantastic. They beat Drew McIntyre and Sheamus. That's great. They need those wins. But Owens and Rollins beat them. That should be implemented into the story. Kevin Owens, he beat them with Rollins. So he believes he can beat them with Sami Zayn. Other than that, it's been a pretty good streak for the Bloodline and the Usos. They beat the Brawling Brutes, Hit Row, Kevin Owens and Matt Riddle. They won War Games, obviously. They lost the War Games Advantage match in November. I'm cool with them losing that one, too. So I look back and I'm like, okay, the last two losses the Usos have, War Games Advantage against two former world champions and the end of the month in December against two former world champions. That makes a ton of sense to me. So I will say they've done a lot better job protecting these guys, because like in August, you had Madcap Moss beating them with Drew McIntyre. Love Drew, but Moss probably shouldn't have been getting the one-up on him, right? And Madcap Moss was getting the one-up on the Usos pretty regularly there for a while. So hopefully they aren't losing any 2-on-2 matches along this way, because what we have right here is something special. Owens and Zayn reuniting is going to be very, very special. But I feel like there should be some hesitation from Kevin Owens. He doesn't necessarily trust him yet. Not yet. But goddamn, this was perfect. This was absolutely perfect, man. Sometimes I feel like we're spoiled because I can't believe that this is the same company that booked the way that the world title had been booked for a year, year and a half. Especially before Roman won it the year or so prior. It's played on so many different emotions, and this is why we watch wrestling. It's why I watch wrestling. I don't know about you guys. You can watch wrestling for whatever reason you want, but this is one of the reasons I watch wrestling. And people can say, oh, the story is more important than the wrestling. The wrestling's more important than the story. I say, why choose? I say, why choose? This is why wins and losses matter. Wins and losses matter because you're trying to make money and win championships. And along the way of winning championships and money, sometimes friendships are lost. Sometimes friendships are gained. Sometimes family bonds are broken. And we get the magic that we're seeing right here. Roman Reigns not only has established a world championship that has long been established, but also the fact of being the most important person in his family and what that family means. We know what it means. We know that Rikishi is a Hall of Famer and was hanging there with the best talent, both in the tag division and the singles division. We know Yokozuna was one of the most feared heels, a WrestleMania main eventer, a world champion. We know 3-Minute Warning probably should have been even more special than what they were, but hey, guess what? Rosie went along and won tag titles as well. Umaga ended up doing his thing and being in one of the biggest WrestleMania matches ever from the standpoint of which he was. We know Afa and Sika were special. We know that Head Shrinkers were special. We see Jacob Fatu killing it, right? We see that. We know about the family. We know about The Rock, the Blood Brothers there, and how The Rock is kind of in the family, but sort of not type of thing. We know about their history. But Roman Reigns really hammered it home and established that being the head of the table, the tribal chief, and that being in the family is a prize all its own. Man, this was just, it's not even over, and it's still been one of the best storylines I've ever seen. In WWE, I'd say it's got to be the best since at least Triple H and Batista, and I think it might be better than Triple H and Batista. We'll see how it ends up, right? Like, I thought that Triple H and Batista, 3 matches was a little overkill. I thought that 1 and a rematch would have been really, really good, but that one was a phenomenal storyline that Vince McMahon wanted to blow it on early, and Triple H and Batista said, no, we're doing this. I don't know what the original plans were for the Bloodline or anything like that, especially with Cody Rhodes still being around. But what we're seeing now is something very, very special, and it makes me just love watching wrestling. It just makes me love it. Well, I loved seeing all of you this week. I loved meeting all of you. It was wonderful catching up on a bunch of stuff. Obviously, we have so many interviews. They're on the shorter side. We've also got tons of clips up on our TikToks and Instagrams and all that good stuff from the presser. We got all that info. I want to thank you guys so much. Again, I met, dozens of you guys this past week between Lexington and San Antonio. And it was really, really great. I love that. Thank you all so much for all the support that you continue to give us. We're back over 9,000 subscribers for a hot day or two until the beginning of the month kicks some off. So I just want to thank you guys for that as well. Didn't realistically think we'd get back there because 2022 is the craziest wrestling news year ever. But also want to thank all of you who checked out our award show, voted, said nice things about the winners. We want to celebrate greatness instead of tearing down people and all that stuff for those. So thank you all so much. It's been just a wonderful and exhausting last couple of weeks. Until next time, we're out.